The Fearless Podcast, in a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. All right, y'all, welcome back to the Fearless Podcast. This is episode 73. And if you remember a while back, I had Akeem Anwar on from Above Phone. And so if you are looking for a secure phone, check out the link down below. But Akeem said, hey, man, you got to have Sean Hawkins on. He's a buddy of mine. He's doing lots of cool stuff, kind of like what y'all are doing. And so today, y'all, I want to welcome y'all to the Open Source Farmer, Sean Hawkins. Hey, Sean, how you doing today?
Hey, Didi, I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Good, good. Well, thanks for coming on. Yeah, so I've been checking out a lot of your stuff. I think it's really cool. And so I thought we could start the conversation today with, how did Sean Hawkins become the Open Source Farmer?
Well, so the name specifically has to do with, you know, I had friends back in high school that were kind of like hacker buddies, and they were all about the open source communication, and it sort of really bled into a lot of what's going on today with our food systems, that there's a lot of information we need to get out there. It needs to be open sourced, and if we don't do it, you know, we're just going to keep running down this sort of like slope of poisoning ourselves. So it's just important that I get the information out there as quickly as possible. And really, farming kind of wasn't even a thing for me. I did construction for a long time, for most of my life, like 20 years, building houses. And farming was kind of in the background. My grandfather did it. And got into a bad car accident and sort of had to take a different look at my life. Like, okay, I can't keep climbing up on roofs and, you know, running around doing, lifting 75 pound bags of concrete all the time. So it's time to make a little bit of a change. I just love gardening as a hobby. And when I started looking at our foods and started eating again, things from my own garden, and that's that difference in flavor, was a huge incentive for me to just keep growing. And everyone around me who didn't eat from a garden was very unhealthy. It's very obvious. You can just look at it every day. I think, what are the statistics now? 75% of our population is morbidly obese. Yeah. You know, half of the kids have obesity, you know, so there's this huge problem that is just slapping us in the face. And, you know, it's going to take a lot of knowledge and a lot of, guidance to kind of get things back in line. So that's why we're open source.
Yeah. And I think 50% of the U.S. population is now diabetic or pre-diabetic. So it is a systemic issue, you know. And it's interesting because now the political talking points are all about like make America healthy again, and they're going to issue a state of emergency and all these things. But, you know, I was on my way into work. I drove by McDonald's, and this is like, I don't know, 6:30 in the morning. And I see this line, and it's always there at 6:30. And it's just this line of traffic. And like, you can do these mandates, you can call it a state of emergency, but people have to break the addiction of these synthetic foods, seed oils, and the ultra processed stuff. It won't matter how much the government spends. It won't matter if it's a state of emergency. And it really does all start with education. I think we've all kind of been there where we were eating the standard American diet and doing all the normie stuff. And then, you know, this whole homestead tsunami that Joel Salatin's talking about. I mean, that's really what kind of got us 10 years ago. If we weren't part of the tsunami, we were probably the earthquake that happened before the tsunami. But, you know, we just realized we had to take control of what we were eating. We had to know more about it, and we had to be able to source it ourselves. And that's when we started raising cows and doing all these things. And it sounds like you had a similar experience.
My experience is, really, a big part of this is my wife. She had come from a terrible relationship, and that mental load puts a big load on your body. you know, you really just don't care. You don't care what you're eating. You're eating garbage all the time. And she also got put on a bunch of pharmaceuticals. This is another part of the whole big problem, this food to like pharmaceutical connection, that she ended up getting put on SSRIs, antidepressants, rescue drugs. And the I used to listen in on the psychologist that was talking to her, and it would be a 15-minute conversation about basically, are you taking your pills? Essentially, and here's more pills for you. So that was like, that was a challenge getting that out of the way also on top of it. And then once we got that done, we started working on food, and we changed to a strictly a carnivore diet. We ate nothing but beef for like a month. It was difficult. That first month is a real challenge. Like it's one thing that kind of separates, I guess, people from it. But once you get through that first month, things start to ease up a little bit. You learn a bunch of different recipes, and we started slowly adding things back in. Sure. And there was one thing that's definitely evident. No seed oils, no carbohydrates, no sugar. Keep those out of your diet. Your health will improve tenfold. And in a matter of 2 months, she dropped 35 pounds.
Wow.
She like stopped snoring. She stopped having all these bowel issues. Like all of these problems just fixed themselves in a matter of no time. And yeah, now she's getting up every day, like bursts of energy, you know, just like a totally different person.
That's great. Yeah. And we've been carnivore now for almost 15 months, and we have slowly introduced, you know, I have about 400 fruit trees. So I've been eating the fruit in season. So we have lots of figs and different things like that. But other than that, I mean, figs, blueberries, and we have mulberries and all that stuff. But I eat usually one meal a day, between 1 to 2 pounds of meat, and then I make sure I get enough fat in there. And it's a total game changer for sleep and for mood and for overall health and for my arthritic issues. It eliminated like my bone spurs and my tennis elbow, and it's helping me thrive with this. I'm missing about like 30 or 40% of my labrum, and all the docs want to replace my shoulder, but I'm like, I'm a little too young for that. So I'm just going to try to bore through and it's working. I mean, I'm pain free and I can work and do everything. I don't have all my range of motion back yet, but we're working on it.
Interesting. There's a company in Mexico that you might be interested in. They do stem cells, but they're ethical stem cells. They're donated from the umbilical cord, and then they grow them out. And there's been some wonderful improvements on pain management and herniated discs and tendons and things.
After my shoulder surgery where they scoped it, I went to Dallas Orthobiologics. It's Donnie Buford, and I had stem cell treatment. It was my stem cell from my bone marrow.
There you go. Nice.
They suck it out of your hip, which is interesting.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, and it was
just gotta weigh your options.
Yeah, it was incredible. I mean, it definitely worked. It definitely helps, and I'm a big proponent of stem cells. I mean, and they injected it with a sonogram in two strategic locations. It completely eliminated all of my pain. And so now just, you know, hoping that with the carnivore and just eating clean and trying to do, you know, everything to optimize that, we're having a lot of success. That's great to hear about your wife. And about how long have you all been carnivore?
We're now in the three and a half months. And we've been slowly adding things in. Like we're eating green beans now. I don't have a problem with that. She can't eat eggs though. Mm-hmm. Something is up with the eggs. She eats an egg and everything just falls apart. But I can eat eggs, no problem. So
if I eat eggs that aren't cooked, because I used to do a lot of raw eggs in my coffee. If I eat eggs that aren't cooked, I get inflammation, but I definitely, there's something up with eggs and my inflammation too. I can't really ingest a lot of eggs. So
what I've heard, this is the theory that I've heard, all of these bacteria and all of these things that the scientists are experimenting with, especially a lot of vaccines, they actually use eggs as the food source for these things to grow on. So they're acclimated to grow on eggs. So when you eat eggs and you've got something in your body, that toxin is going to want to feed on that.
Wow. That's very interesting. I never thought about that, but that's, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. So, okay. So what are you,
what was that? So that we kind of do that in mushroom growing as well. We grow things out on agures and egg whites and things like that.
Yeah. Well, that's a good segue. That's what I was going to say. So what are you doing at the open source farmer? You're growing mushrooms?
I made another company. So open source farmer is the educational, essentially free education. I didn't want to mess with that too much and monetize that. So I made another company called Cultivated Mind and cultivated-mind.com. And we grow mushrooms and it's medicinal. It's the other side of the food system. So we're taking care of our food and we're also getting some really concentrated medicines because mushrooms are, they're just amazing. They have some wonderful properties going on that almost boggle the mind. I mean, they almost seem alien to this planet with the things that they can do. So we grow a bunch of medicine here and concentrated, and it's been really, the response has actually been really great. I'm really encouraged to see people give me reviews. So it's wonderful to get out there and give something back to the people that's actually helping. And it's not just some, you know, pharmaceutical drug that they're going to be addicted to and give them five side effects and they got to take some other thing, you know. Mushrooms are extremely safe, extremely safe.
Yeah. And they've been using mushrooms for thousands of years and they're adaptogenic. So they kind of conform to what you need. So what kind of mushrooms are you growing? What are you,
making? So, the three main ones that I grow is, lion's mane, cordyceps and reishi. Lion's mane is real fast. It's relatively easy. Cordyceps is essentially the cash crop. You know, it's very high dollar, low yields. It's challenging to grow. But there's a big boom with cordyceps right now. It's been used by the Chinese in the Olympics for a very long time. It oxygenates the blood and gives you a huge amount of endurance, gives you this burst of energy that's not like coffee or drinking energy drinks. So it's just basically getting really popular right now because everybody's, you know, trying to get energy. So they're always looking for something. That's not necessarily my favorite one, though. You know, the one that's my favorite is the least bought mushroom. It's the immune blend. So like when you take maitake, turkey tail, and shiitake, and you combine those three together, they actually have this immunomodulistic effect on your body, like you're saying, in adaptogens. If you need an immune boost, it'll give you a boost. If you have an overactive immune system and your body is attacking itself, it'll calm it down with the same mushroom. Like, very cool. No pharmaceutical can do that. Only mushrooms can activate that type of a system in the body. I just think it's a funny contrast that you're right. You said with the McDonald's thing, people aren't looking at their health. They're not really concentrated about their health. They're not conscious about it. Like I said, it's my least selling one. They want the energy one. When I wish people would take the immune one, because you would just have a natural amount of energy all the time because your body would be functioning properly. You would be, right. Your cells would be producing what they need to produce, the secondary metabolites, and producing ATP at its normal rate. So you're right. We need to change people's mindsets about health and food. And I think these stories about my wife and about seeing this dynamic between good and bad diet is what's going to do it. People are going to have to feel the pain, unfortunately.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah, and it's amazing at the people that feel the pain and just continue to push through the pain to abuse themselves with food. And it's designed so addictive that it's hard for them to break.
I got a couple of those people in my life too. So
how are you grown these mushrooms? What made you start growing mushrooms?
So Korean natural farming. It's a farming style from Korea, obviously. This, it's been a trend, I guess, for now for about 15 years or so. A gentleman named Hong Kyu Cho, he's a South Korean man who basically traveled all of sort of East Asia and learned all these different farming styles. He went to Japan, he went to Taiwan, he went to China, and brought these farming styles back and kind of made his own curriculum around all of these different methods. And essentially, you can create your own farm, even a large-scale farm, with inputs that you get almost strictly from your own property. Like, you don't have to go out and buy stuff, just very basic stuff like some sugar and maybe grain, but you can grow the grain on your property as well, you know, so you may remain self-sufficient. In the midst of learning this Korean natural farming, it's really more of learning how nature operates. And in this, I learned about fungus. Fungus is probably one of the most vital, important parts of nature. If it wasn't for fungus, you and me wouldn't be here today. Like, it does everything. It is one of the main building blocks of this planet. So when I sort of saw that and started diving into fungus, because a lot of the...
Oh, yeah, you accidentally muted yourself, Sean. Something just muted. The audio improved, and then it just muted on you.
Is that better?
Oh, there you go. You're back.
Okay.
Yep, you're good.
All right. I don't know what I did. I'm going to stop touching things. And there might be a loose wire while we're having problems.
Yeah, so we were talking about, like, fungus, and, you know, that's real interesting with, like, the soil food web. What I've been learning about the soil food web is if you're – soil biome is right, you don't even need fertilizers, because that soil biome is creating all your nutrients.
Yes, almost. It's not for everyone. If you put the biology back in, a lot of people, yes, you probably don't need to fertilize. Now, you will have to add material back in, like you'll have to grow a cover crop and then cut that cover crop down and let that green material rest back into the land, because if you're farming stuff and you're pulling stuff out, you need to be putting stuff back in. So that's why we do cover crops and seeds and things like that, and then bring animals in to put their waste in there too. So there's a rotation. But yes, the biology is a massive part of your soil health, and we have done a number on it over the last 100 years. We have worked very diligently at destroying the life in the soil, and it's why we are so unhealthy today. And if we focused on the soil, if we focused on the microbiology and restoring the life in the soil, all of the rest of this stuff would just fix itself. The CO2 would fix itself, which is not really a problem anyways. The pollution would fix itself. Our diets would fix themselves. Our community and our political divisions would even fix themselves if we fixed the soil. All of it is intricately interconnected. It's honestly my opinion why we're having so much of a division right now is because we can't think straight, because we're so unhealthy. We've poisoned our brains, and we have altered the way that we can even think about logic and reason, and communication's impossible. So until we get back to getting our bodies healthy, our minds are not going to be able to get right as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, your health is directly tied to your mental state, just like you were saying with your wife. You know, she's, and I forget how many people now, I think over half of the US population are on SSRIs as well. And I have so many friends, and there's so many great stories about the carnivore diet and SSRIs and people coming off all that stuff. And all it is the mind has been starved from all these essential fats and different things. And then plus all the additional pollution, and then the soil has been depleted. But I think you make a great point, is as you correct those things And as you gain mental clarity and the brain fog lifts, then you can think clearly. And really what I think that does is it eliminates all this political theater stuff, because most of it is just noise and it's just like talking points. And it's basically two people that are on the same team and they want to act like they're on different sides. And then once you get the mental clarity, you kind of see through that. And then you start talking about, okay, well, let's find solutions. Like, what can we do? Like, what can I do today? And that's what's so neat about farming and ranching and different things is like, these are things that we can actively do. And then when we see that being systematically attacked, you know, that's when it ultimately you're kind of forced back into the political realm, because we do have these social engineers that want us to be sick and tired and mentally deranged, because we're much easier to manipulate and we're much more docile. And, you know, with the fluoride and all of it, you know, it's all to dumb down and make the public weak and docile so that they're easily susceptible to the programming.
Absolutely. And that's really goes along with the teaching as well. What I've noticed, the more you teach people about soil and food and health and nutrition, all of that propaganda, it just sort of washes away. Like it's much more easier to see through it, because you have this like foundation that you can work on, that you can build on, that fear doesn't exist. You know, they really need you to be afraid all the time, or their propaganda doesn't work. And whenever you know how to grow your own food, when you can make your own land healthy with the things that are just already there on the land, there's not much fear to be had in your area, in your space. You've got a lot of other things, wonderful, creative things that are going on, and fear doesn't have much room, you know.
Yeah, it's so interesting that you mentioned that. I think it was Ryan Christensen at the Last American Vagabond. He had Catherine Austin Fitz on recently, and they were talking about even the dialectic between the fear and the hopium, you know. And it's like two ranges where, you know, the sky is falling, this is an existential threat, and this candidate and her people are an existential threat to humanity. And then over here you have the hopium, that's the balance to that fear scale, and it's all these like promises that nobody delivers on. And it's the same thing. It's like you can focus on that stuff, or you can focus on real things that matter. I mean, can you get any more real than the food that you put into your mouth and being part of that process, learning how to cultivate that food, learning how to maximize it and to make it more nutrient dense? There's nothing more real than that. Like, so many people are so disconnected from their food. Like when they buy their beef in the store and it's in saran wrap on a styrofoam plate, you know, with the juice catcher packet. I mean, it's the most unhealthy thing in the world. And you know, it can be part of that process and actually like process a cow. I think that everybody, you know, because 150 years ago, people were much more accustomed to that process. And now if you're a hunter, you're very accustomed to that process, because you have to usually clean your animal and then you're usually butchering it and everything. So, you know, hunters kind of get it, but most people that even eat beef, they're so disconnected from the process, they don't even know how it gets in the plastic wrapper that they buy it in the store. You know, and when you're participating in that process, you have a much greater appreciation and value for the animal. That's what's amazing, is like, you know, all these vegans, and they want to scream and screech and all this stuff, and they're just as disconnected from their pea protein powder, you know, as the beef eaters are from the meat. And it's the exact same thing. You know, they're so disconnected from it that they think like an Oreo is a vegan dessert or whatever. And it's not just, yeah, the opposite side.
The propagandized ones certainly think that they can do that. And I have a buddy who's vegan, and and I understand why he does it. And I try to tell people, you know, you might be able to do that if we lived in a different country.
Mm-hmm.
Here in America, it's impossible. You cannot get an organic fruit or vegetable. That fruit or vegetable was sprayed 2 weeks before that inspector came to take the test to make sure that there was not too many pesticide levels on that fruit. That the USD organization, they just essentially said, here's a list of pesticides that you're now allowed to use. They're a little bit lower values on the percentages, so it's okay. It's not actually organic, so we're getting this food that is sprayed with chemicals. It's not healthy because it's devoid of nutrition, because there's no health in the soil, so you're really just eating a bunch of fiber, a bunch of filler. So if we lived in, let's say, maybe Italy or another country where these things grew seasonally and you could actually get the proper nutrition from a healthy soil, then sure. But you're not going to get that at Kroger's. You're not going to get that at Walmart. You're not even going to get that at Whole Foods. Like, that doesn't exist in this country unless you're going to the farm, which I love what John's doing. I wanted to tap into that a little bit more. to really get healthy food back to the people. And then maybe you could try that out. I would like to see how people's health improve once you get some real food in your system instead of this, you know, 25% nutritionally dense cucumber that you're going to have to eat 8 of them just to get any type of nutrition in your body. So it's a challenge where we're being attacked like on all sides. And I think that's why the carnivore diet works so well, because there's not as much change or altering of the beef. And especially if you do the grass fed. Oh, and I want to touch on that point about what you said with the fats. So I just found this out recently. You get omega-3s from grass fed beef. Omega-3s are anti-inflammatory. You get omega-6s from grain-fed beef. Omega-6s are inflammatory. We have swapped what we should be eating. And so when someone goes and gets a grain-fed, mass-processed cow, you're getting the same inflammatory issues as eating a carbohydrate. So it does have to be grass-fed. It's extremely important, or you don't get those omega-3s.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, it's really nuts. And that's where we're starting to learn these things. Like, why did we change these systems? Why are we trying to alter these things that nature has been doing forever? You know, God has a plan. All we have to do is just watch and see what's happening with nature and replicate that and help facilitate. And yeah, everything will just fall into place.
Well, I mean, really, when you think about it, what happened in the industrial age and in the age of scientism, you know, once science went past like real observable science and became a religion, that was basically, you know, the technocracy and all the guys that were involved, the Fabian socialist and the eugenicist and the Malthusians, right? That there's this, you know, this population explosion, and that's the existential threat to humanity. Well, they all pushed this industrialization, better living through science. And, you know, and it's not about like the real, it's not about like the earth and the dirt and the stuff we can grow. It's all about, well, we can reduce all these things to these chemical compounds. And as long as you're getting the right chemical compound, it doesn't matter if it's natural. It doesn't matter if it's synthetic. As a matter of fact, it's much better and quicker and faster and more efficient to provide you with this synthetic B vitamin. And it's cheaper than for you to get the real B vitamin by eating the beef. And that's basically how they kind of hijack the entire system. It's like, look at Henry Ford. You know, he's so good at mass producing cars. We'll just apply that to everything. We'll apply that to our agriculture. We'll apply it to our husbandry. We're going to apply it to, you know, all of the major industries. And so they basically industrialized everything.
Yeah.
And then once it went industrial, then it went monolithic, you know, and that's why now you have like, what, 3 major beef processors, and it's like China and Brazil and there's like three of them, and they produce like 80% of all the beef sold in America. And it's so monolithic. And I think now in the hog industry, I think it's like so monolithic. I think it's like two, because China just bought one of the biggest hog grower processors. And I think there's like two pork manufacturers do like 80 or 90% of all the pork in America.
And they wonder why Boar's Head had a listeria outbreak.
Yeah, exactly.
It all goes to the same factory.
Right. And that's the craziest thing, is the more we decentralize and open source, right? And the less, the more we open source, the more there's not patents, you know, because that's another thing. That's what open source is about, right? This stuff isn't patentable. Just like you were saying, this is God's creation and God created it and he holds the patent on it. And if you want to try to do that, the only reason you want to try to do that is because you think you're God and you want to make, and you just conveniently make a lot of money by doing that.
Yeah.
And in reality, if we just change our entire philosophy on life, and, you know, 10 years ago, we were in the Northeast and I owned a construction company and we had three little children and it was very fast paced. And I was working 6 days a week. I was working 12 hour days and I was missing out on my children growing up, and I have an awesome wife, and I was missing out on her. I was so busy, and I was incredibly successful. I was very successful. And we sat down and said, you know, we need to change. Like, we need to live a slower, more intentional, purposeful life. And really what it is it's observing the masses and doing the opposite. And there's a lot of very busy people that are they're not even busy being successful. They're busy doing nothing. They're busy entertaining themselves to death. You know?
Yep. Yeah. That was one of my big downfalls, was entertainment. I really didn't get started getting too busy until maybe about 5 years ago. Like, COVID sort of really gave me that big shock. Like, I'm like, oh, okay, now it's time to move.
Yeah. And it's so interesting how, you know, I was the same thing. I was a super sports nerd, you know, obsessed with sports and fantasy football and all these different things and movies and all this stuff. And when you cut that drug, it's just as much as a psychological drug as heroin and as crack and as high fructose corn syrup, right? Yep. And when you cut that out, you now have this is just abundance of time where you can be doing real things, you know, right.
And creative things that are way more entertaining and way more satisfaction than I ever could have gotten watching or playing a game.
Yeah. And now you have time for your children and you can invest in them and you can pour into what they love about life and what they're interested in. And you're not just like plugged, sitting down in the lazy boy, watching the drug with the plug, you know, and your life is just passing you by, going down the drain. Your health is getting worse and worse and worse. And you just see this pattern. And the reason I recognize the pattern in other people, because I recognize the pattern in myself, you know. And sometimes when you say that kind of stuff, people are like, oh, you're so judgmental. All I'm recognizing in other people is the pattern that I saw in myself. And, you know, thank the Lord that he gave me the wisdom to say, yeah, this has to change. Like, if nothing changes, nothing changes. Like, and so if you see what the issues and problems are, and then if you just remove those things, and what happens is now you have more space. And that space is filled by the good things in life, whether it's your faith and your church family or your children or your food, all these other things of value that are so valuable, you can't even put a value on them. There's not a monetary value, you know, and I was so busy making money and I was making so much an hour, you know, but I was losing all this real value.
Right.
You know, just like eternal value.
What's that hourly rate worth?
Exactly. Like, how do you buy 10 years back of your kid's life? You know what I mean? Right. How much does that cost? You know?
Oh man, that's what I love about being an entrepreneur, and I think something that's always been beaten into my head, or at least there's a part of me that is always craved that. This is, I guess, my third business that I've owned. And every time I get a job, you know, I do it because I have to do it. And all of these like health issues come up, like all of these like autoimmune problems start popping up. And as soon as I started the company and things started going well, all that went away. I'm working harder than I ever have working at that other job.
Yeah.
But all of those health problems are gone.
Yeah. Like so my
satisfaction that comes with creating.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. Our three oldest boys, they started a like construction handyman company, and you know, things are slowing down right now, which is normal. I mean, and plus things always start to slow down this time of year. And then on an election year, they historically like ghost out like every 4 years. This always happens.
Interesting.
And so things were slowing down for them. And so my one son is just broke ground on his house, and he's like, he got a couple job offers, you know, and he's like, man, I should really just get a job. And I said, now listen, and he's never had a job. Well, he's had a couple temporary jobs, but he's usually always worked for me or himself. And I said, now look, what you're going to do is you're going to go get an hourly job, and you're going to work for somebody else, and you're going to deal with all of the stress, the headaches, the clicks and the interpersonal angst stuff, and mostly a bunch of people that really hate what they do, unfortunately, you know, and that's all part of this like stress factor. Or you can go through the valleys and the peaks, right, and keep doing your thing and keep, you know, just keep working harder and harder and harder, sending out your estimates. And yeah, there'll be slow periods, but you'll more than make up for it when, as things pick back up. And at the end of the month, you're like, oh, wow, well, I still made more money than if I was clocking in and out at a 9 to 5. And you'll still be autonomous. You'll still own your time. You'll still have the flexibility to, you know, like, because we sell our beef. So what happened when things started to slow down? It's like, hey, we got a couple more cows that we can process. Let's bring that, you know, make that happen. And and that's what's really great. You know, I'm a serial entrepreneur like you, like, is to be well diversified, to have multiple irons in the fire, not too many. You can only do a few things extremely well. You can't do more than three or four things very well. So, you know, you want to be diverse. What's that?
Yeah, I resemble that comment.
yeah. So, we're doing the same, and that ubiquity is good too, because you never know what's going to happen with life, and things change and circumstances change. So if you're diversified and you have multiple irons in the fire, you know, you can roll with the punches and the changes in life, and you don't have to just fall back to like an employee status. Unless, I mean, if that was like a DEFCON 5 definite, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. There's lots of people that are great.
You have to do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
If it requires you to go to that job so that you can move on and do the things that you really love, then you've got to do it. It's just part of the process.
You know? Yeah. But
use that motivation, you know, to get you to the next step.
Yeah. And what's so fascinating for me is I'd always been self-employed. We moved to Texas, and I was just going to start back up my construction company. And, you know, I got really, you know, nervous because I hadn't made any money in like 30 days. And I'm like, you know what? I just got to go get a job. And the funny thing is I got a job and it took off, and I've been an employee now for like 10 years. And I always say, I'll never be an employee. I really love what I'm doing. I have an enormous amount of flexibility. I make like incredible money, and I love it. And so, I'm going to do it for as long as I can do it. But I always encourage everybody, do your own thing, man. Go for it. Like, do not, you know, if you think you need to do it, try it. You won't know unless you try. And then if you fail, you try, fail, adjust, you know, that's what life's all about.
Do it right now while you're working your other job. It's honestly the only way that it's going to work.
Exactly. Yeah. Diversify.
Yeah.
That's why I'm talking to you here on the podcast. I mean, that's the whole point of all of this. And it's neat. So how long have you been, how long have you had the mushroom company?
So the mushroom company is a year old. I've been growing mushrooms for about 3 years now. And it's just blown me away. Like the more and more I learn about it, the more you can learn, the more that these things, they're really kind of the keys to a lot of the problems that we actually have going on. They're going to fix a lot of the pollution. They're going to fix a lot of the health issues we have. They're going to fix the soil. And it's mostly because I saw such a wonderful response. Part of the regimen of helping my wife was a mushroom regimen. We gave her lion's mane and chaga and reishi, turkey tail every day, to go along as a, essentially the substitute for the pharmaceuticals. You know, you have to put something in there to help sort of manage these things. And it was definitely a huge stepping stone to helping her get off of that stuff, because those SSRIs, they have terrible withdrawal effects. Mm-hmm. You get down to the land. I didn't know about this until we started getting her off of it, that when you start coming off of an SSRI, and you get down to that last 10% of that SSRI, you have to cut back to only going down 1% at a time until you've gotten off of that SRI. Because if you go down 10% and then you stop taking the drug completely, you'll go into withdrawals. The effects are so strong at such a tiny dose. They have a really large, like, diminishing returns. So the more you take, the less effect you get. So you take a super tiny dose and you get this massive dopamine reaction from it. So then when you come off, it makes you think that you're still depressed, when really it's just withdrawal effects from the drug. And then the doctor's like, well, back on the drug again.
Yeah,
that's how we get stuck on these things forever. They have created an addiction on every single level of our society. Like, the, you know, the food industries are owned by the tobacco companies.
Tobacco, yeah.
Yeah, Philip Morris owns Kraft. They have scientists that specifically create combinations of these chemicals to make them more addictive than heroin, more addictive than cocaine.
And not only that, Sean, this is why it's real important, and you will find a link down below to Cultivated Mind, cultivated-mind.com. You'll find a link down below. But what I'm noticing is there were all these really good products and supplements. One product that I really liked a lot was on it had like, it was called Athletic Performance Packet, and it had all your daily essential stuff in there. And I love that product. That on it is owned by Unilever. And so what we're seeing is, like, even in these, different product lines that are supposed to be organic, you know, and supposed to be whole foods and all this stuff, these monolithic transnational mega corporations are buying up all of these companies, which is why it's so much more important for home, basically startup, smaller companies like yours, because you're going to get the highest quality. It's going to, you know, I once these multinational monolithic mega corporations buy stuff, there's no way that there can be quality control or anything. No. You know, it's like we were talking about with the Listeria outbreak. You know, when you have 4 mega processing plants that are processing like 80% of the food, that's when you are going to have problems. But if you have tiny microprocessors, you know, if you have a little, you know, we use a microprocessor that only processes inside our county. Well, you know, when it's decentralized, right, and open source, that is actually a fail safe. That's what keeps things from spreading. It keeps these different diseases at bay, just because it's a much smaller scale. It's easier to manage.
You don't have 500 cows under the same chopping block, you know, going into the same meat grinder. You know, one of them has a disease, it spreads to the entire into the entire thing. So you're right. We need to decentralize, but we also do need to attack this from the top down as well. That's what I really loved about Korean natural farming and regenerative agriculture is that you can do these things on a large scale. You can do this on 5,000 acres. Gabe Brown. I don't know if you've heard of Gabe Brown before.
Idaho, I think, or
Montana. Or no, North Dakota. Sorry, North Dakota.
Okay.
Yeah, North Dakota. He 5,000 acres of wheat, corn, and triticale, and like some other things. And he's doing it. He's doing regenerative agriculture on a large scale. His quality and his yields are higher than the conventional agriculture right next door to him. The proof is in the pudding. It's working. It can be done. There is a little bit of angst that comes with that change. It's a big change.
Sure.
And if you don't see profits in the first year or two, you know, that's a big problem. People lose their farms over that. So it's definitely encouraging seeing Gabe do it. And in fact, it kind of leads me into this next part. We do classes. We do 5-day classes for Korean natural farming where we really get into the nitty gritty and we show you how to do this system completely on your farm. I'm at the point where when we do the next class, y'all cut it out. Sorry, my dogs are want food. we're going to have a 5-day class coming up maybe February or so. My teacher, I guess I should talk about him sooner. His name is Chris Trump. He went to Korea to learn from Hong Kyu Cho. He went 11 times and he brought it back to the States and he's been teaching all over America and he's really started this huge movement that has been growing massively. He has agreed to come down and do a 5-day class down here in Texas. So we're going to be setting that up at the beginning of next year. And we're trying to get large scale farmers, people that have 10 or more acres. I'd prefer 50 acres. You got 1,000 acres, please. I'll come to your farm for free if you have 1,000 acres and I will help you get things in line. You know, the large scale is where I want to kind of focus. We've got a nice amount of little farms that are popping up everywhere, but I think it's time to make big change. You know, with RFK's speech, you know, I don't care about the politics. I care about changing our systems. And if that's on everyone's minds right now, if that's what's coming out of everyone's mouths, then I'm going to jump on that wave and we're going to see if we can get some farms changed and get some food changed.
Well, and that's what's cool about Gabe Brown, Joel Salatin, and, you know, Will Harris. These guys have proved that it's viable and not just viable, scalable, and lucrative enough so that it's like, you know, Will Harris and Joel Salatin, these are legacy farms, you know, that their children are now managing and running. So they're not only showing that they're viable, lucrative, and that they're good for the environment and they sequester carbon and all these things, but they're actually tiered to where they're handing this off to the next generation and building real legacy with real success. And I mean, that if you want to talk about what made America great, that was all part of taking the opportunity and then maximizing. You have the opportunity and the opportunity is worthless unless you do something with it, right? But then you do something with it, but you do it in a way where it's anti-stock market, you know, the stock market and the bonds. You know, if you want to be in the stocks and in the bonds, then play in that synthetic world,
right? And
the stocks and the bonds.
It's a video game.
Yeah. But if you're in the real world, taking real opportunities and then investing your time and effort and labor and sweat into that, and then you're making real food and you're providing real solutions for real people, and people get to eat real food and they then get to experience real health. It is literally the counterculture to our modern culture. Yeah. And that's really what it's about: observing the masses, doing the opposite, being part of the solution, and then living that out in a real way. And look, you can do that if you're not on 50 acres. You can be a part of that. You can at least,
sure,
find somebody local to buy your food. I mean, that's the first step, you know. First step is monetize a local rancher or farmer and know where your food's coming from. That's the very first step. And then if opportunity presents itself and God blesses you and you can get some dirt and you can raise some stuff, and then, you know, what we experienced, we started out on 5 acres and we did what we could. And now we almost have 50 acres, but we started out with chickens and all that stuff. And I did the whole chicken tractor. And
KNF has a great chicken regimen.
What's that?
KNF has a great chicken regimen.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we were doing like the grass fed chickens and the chicken tractor and all that stuff. And I'm just like, wow, this is really expensive, man. Like, like this is, and so yep. Then we started with cows. And I mean, to me, if you have the room, if you have the land, a cow is the simplest animal. Now it's a very big animal, and with the size comes the challenges with that size. But as far as like set it and forget it, man, cows are where it's at for us. I mean,
nice.
We love growing cows.
That's great. Yeah, that's awesome. I'd love to come check out your place, man. Like, come check out your cows, you know. In fact, I think I might be up that way here in the next couple of months.
Oh, cool. Yeah, let us know, man.
There's a class up there, Athens, Texas.
Yes, yeah. So Athens is probably about an hour or half south of. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's that permaculture expo, right?
Yeah, the permaculture expo. Yeah, that's where I'll be. Yeah. So.
Oh, yeah, cool. And that's the same. I think that's the same time as the Rogue Food Conference.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Well.
A few days. Yeah. Yeah. So I'll be in Fort Worth or wherever that is.
Oh, okay. Cool. We'll have fun with that.
Yeah. Yes, this has been great. So give us a little more maybe mushroom knowledge. Like, what kind of substrates are you growing these mushrooms in? I'm curious.
Wood chips.
Okay.
You know, we get wood chips. We also get wheat. You have to be very careful where you buy your stuff from because, you know, I was using this one particular supplier for a little while. And I was like, oh, hey, there's another supplier over here. He's a little closer and he's a little cheaper. And that entire crop failed. Because something with grain. Yeah.
So it's like wheat berries?
Yeah, wheat berries and wood chips. Yeah, or wood shavings, really. I like them to be as small as possible.
Okay.
Yeah, so really the salt dust is better. The smaller the particle, the better the flush that you'll get. You grow them on wood chips. And the cordyceps is grown on rice or beans. I'll sometimes do it on beans. But the cordyceps is a really fun one, man. It's like it's originally grown on insects. That's where it really comes from. It comes from insect larvae. They're an entomopathogenic fungi where they attack bugs and eat bugs, but they'll also grow on rice as well. So you can just grow the same thing on rice and get the same medicine out of it. So, and once we harvest it, we break it down and we run it through an alcohol extraction, and we do it's not a hot water. I would say it's medium warm, not too hot. You don't want to get too hot because you start killing off some of the compounds. And then I'll do an ultrasonic bath, and that will break open all the cell walls, release all the medicine that's inside the fungus, because the medicine's locked inside the cell wall. That shell is very tough, and you actually have to kind of either heat it up or you have to like physically break it with ultrasonic to get all that medicine out of there. So when someone's just eating like a raw mushroom, you're only getting a tiny fraction of what that mushroom can actually offer you. So anybody who does eat mushrooms, cook them. Definitely cook them. You want to make sure you unlock the cells and you get that bioavailability so that it can be absorbed into the gut. So just a little FYI.
And didn't you mention, are you getting ready to come out with like a animal supplement or something?
Yeah. In fact, I've been baking like crazy. we're doing a dog treat. Yeah. It's grain-free coconut flour. And yeah, we're doing a right now it's reishi and lion's mane, but I think I'm going to put all, I'm going to put like six or seven different mushrooms in it eventually. Yeah. And they're coming along good.
Yeah. Cause somebody in one of my messaging groups is growing mushrooms for his cows.
Okay.
Yeah. And I didn't know exactly what it was, but it was very interesting.
Interesting.
I'm going in too many directions. I can't even remember where I saw it, but I was like, wow, yeah, mushrooms for your cows.
There's all those irons in that fire. Watch out.
yeah. Well, Sean, man, this has been great. I appreciate you taking the time. Before we sign off here, where can people find you? Where's the best place to find you, Sean?
You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, Rumble. It's under Open Source Farmer. So you can go to my link tree and it'll have all my links. It's linktr.ee/Open Source Farmer. And that should be where you'll see the mushroom company and the Facebook and Instagram. And I also post all my events there. So if there's a class that's anywhere, you guys should see that there as well.
Great. I'll put all those links down below. I'll do the link tree and then I'll put our affiliate link for the cultivatedmind.com. And yeah, this has been great. So in wrapping up here, Sean, do you have any parting thoughts or any closing thoughts that you want to leave with everybody?
This chaos that we're in right now is always temporary. Everything changes all the time. So just always be prepared for change, be prepared for chaos, and then be prepared for peace, you know, and make sure that you get your household in order so that you're prepared for both of those times. We're all here as a community together. We have massive communication amongst one another now that we never had before. So the communities are there. The communities are growing. Like we're part of the Freedom Cells group that's, you know, Hakeem's part of as well. So get out there, talk to people who have the same mindset as you, find a farm. Let's get together with John and figure out how to make these food systems that are all interconnected and we can all buy from the same place efficiently. And man, we have so much creative work to do. Like there's so much that is possible for us to do. You know, that's the way I see it.
And if we'll just unplug and stop entertaining ourselves to death, we'll have time to invest in these solutions, right? And invest and create these solutions before it's existential, right? So it's like, right. Well, now it's too late. We waited too long. And
COVID woke me up. And then I figured, hey, I guess it's not too late, but it's time to get busy, you know? Thank you very much, DD. I appreciate you having me on, man. It's been great.
Yeah, and y'all, I just want to remind you, we are completely demonetized on YouTube. So if you appreciate our content, it is value for value. Go on over to thetexasboys.com. We do have two steers available in October. So if you want to reserve a cow, you can do that over there, quarters, halves, and wholes. And we love y'all and appreciate y'all.
I have to take you up on that.
Yeah. Absolutely. That'd be great. Yeah. All right, y'all. Remember, stay fearless, my friends.
Peace.